What does love look like? Well, you're not likely to get an accurate portrayal of that in the movies and TV shows of our day. But you will as you look at the life and ministry of Jesus. Let's do that together today on The Balanced Word.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands and the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
We're about to sit in on an argument between the disciples over the question, who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom of God? It's interesting how Jesus would respond, and through it all, we discover a valuable lesson on what's really important in life and what love looks like. Pastor Dave Rolfe has us turn to the 13th chapter of John today on The Balanced Word, where we see Jesus lay down a beautiful example of what a loving servant should look like. So join us there if you would. Let's get started.
Well, now, as we this year going through the Gospel of John, we've come to John chapter 13 this morning. So if you have a Bible or a smartphone or an iPad, turn over to John chapter 13. One of the things that always impresses you about John was a disciple of Jesus who really had a great impact with Jesus and then certainly through the early church. He not only wrote the Gospel of John, he wrote the letters 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, and he also wrote the book of Revelation. But the one thing that you get when you read John is he was so impressed about the love of Jesus and how important it is for us to love others. And he always says, that's how you can tell that you follow Jesus. He called himself the disciple who Jesus loved, because for him, when he realized that Jesus loved him, it gave him his whole identity. It was like, wow, that's who I am. And so here in John chapter 13, Jesus was through preaching. He had already done everything that he could to reach out to people with the truth and invite them to be in a relationship with him. But now it's the last week of Jesus' life. He's ready to go and die. And so everything that he's doing now is to prepare this handful of followers into how to do life without him, how to live in a way, in a real practical way, that shows that they get everything that he has been communicating. And so here in John chapter 13, John demonstrates for us, okay, what does love really look like? People can throw the word love around all they want, but love looks like something specifically, especially in the context of how Jesus shows it. You know, you can say, you know, I love you, but, or talking about somebody else, yeah, I really love them, but usually then we're going to completely counteract the fact that we actually love someone. It's like when someone says to you, I don't want to be rude, but it's like, okay, you're going to be rude. I get it. But here in a real tangible way, Jesus demonstrates his love for the disciples. And so John thought, this is something that you don't want to miss. And so he wrote about this evening, this night, as Jesus was with his disciples. And it says, we'll begin with verse 1. Now, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come, that he should depart from this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. That doesn't mean he loved them until his life was over. Loving them to the end is he loved them to the max. He loved them all the way. He loved them as deep as love is capable. And so the story that we're about to see is put into that context, that Jesus is like, I love them so much and I want them to see it. So, here you go. Supper was ended. The devil had already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him. So Judas already has those plans. But Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come from God and was going to God, Jesus knew who he was, where he was from, where he was going. In that context, he rose from supper and laid aside his garments, took a towel and girded himself. You would gird yourself by taking your robe and tucking it into your belt. He also tucked a towel in there. And after that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. Washing feet in those days was generally a courtesy that a person who was wealthy enough to have slaves would have someone do for you. They wore sandals. In this case, they had just walked down that dirt road that starts up on the Mount of Olives and heads into the east part of Jerusalem on that Palm Sunday. And they're walking behind a donkey, if you get the picture. And so their feet were kind of disgusting. But they didn't have a servant there. So Jesus, amazingly, their master, their Lord, he gets a bowl and he gets down there and he begins to wash their feet. And he begins to serve them. And there's no doubt about it. For most of the disciples, it was like, what a special moment this is. How intimate this would be. A little awkward for Judas when he washed it. Yeah, thanks. You know, and apparently for a different reason, awkward for Peter. And, you know, it probably would be awkward for me as well, honestly. Like, washing my feet? That's weird. But this was a part of their culture, so it wasn't so weird. Over the years, I've had a few people who, you know, people come to you and tell you that God told them something, and you know God didn't tell them, but you just want to humor them. And so, like, God told me I'm supposed to wash your feet. Ah, gee, okay, you know. And I've let them do it a couple times, but I'm really not comfortable with anybody but me washing my feet. But for them, this was a courtesy that they would, and please don't offer after the service. But, you know, here this is offered up. But look, Peter's like, I'm not okay with this. Verse 6, he came to Simon Peter, and Peter said to him, Lord, are you washing my feet? Like, wait just a minute here. What do you think you're doing to me? Jesus answered and said to him, what I'm doing you don't understand now, but you will know after this. Peter said to him, you shall never wash my feet. You got to love Peter because he's always telling Jesus what he couldn't do, what he shouldn't do, what he, you know, that's why one time Jesus called him Satan, you know. But Jesus answered him, if I don't wash you, you have no part with me. And Peter said to him, well, then not my feet only, but also my hands and my head. Jesus said to him, he who is bathed needs only to wash his feet, but is completely clean, and you're clean, but not all of you. For he knew who would betray him. Therefore, he said, you're not all clean. So when he had washed their feet, taken his garments, and sat down again, he said to them, do you know what I have done to you? Did you just notice what I did? You call me teacher and Lord, and you say, well, for I am teacher and Lord. But if I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. Most assuredly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is he who is sent greater than he who sent him. If you know these things, you're blessed if you do them. You've got to be impressed with Jesus' humility. This was the lowest kind of job that anyone could have. And he is doing it on his worst week ever. He is going to be betrayed. He's going to be denied. He is going to be, you know, beaten and humiliated and ultimately nailed to a cross. And yet at this time, when he knows what he's going to go through and they don't, he says, let me wash your feet. The humility is just shockingly impressive at this point. And how special it must have been for the disciples. I can't even imagine having Jesus do this humbling act for me. And again, for most of us, it would be like, wow, might be awkward, but you'd also remember that day when he did that for us? It must have been special, especially in retrospect. Peter saw that it was special too. Peter knew he was special. But what Peter didn't understand is, you're not more special than everyone else. With Peter, he was always trying to put himself as being a little better than everyone else. We will see it at the end of the chapter as well. But at this point, he's like, okay, I saw you wash John's feet. I saw you wash the feet of, of these other guys. I saw you wash Judas's feet, the accountant, but you're not going to wash my feet. I'm not like these other guys. You're not going to do that for me. So he's not like, wow, we are so lucky. He's like, no, not me. So then when Jesus tells him, well, then you're done. You can't have a part in me. Then, again, he goes special the other way. Like, okay, these guys get their feet washed, but wash my, give me a shampoo and a shave. You know, do it, make it extra special for me. Because he wanted to be special, but he wanted to be more special than everyone else. And we end up seeing that's not what Jesus had in mind at all. But the thing that jumps out as he explains this is he said, I want you, this is an example that I am doing, and I want you to do this for one another. This is something that I'm doing for you so that in verse 14, you also ought to wash one another's feet. The two words one another are actually one word in the Greek, and it's a word alelon. What it means is, and by the way, it's used like almost 100 times in the New Testament, a bunch of times in John. Alelon, the word allos, A-L-L-O-S, from which the English word all comes from, it's a word that actually at its root means different. So when you're talking about all, it means every variety, every kind, everyone together, you're all in this alike. All means all. But alelon is an interesting compound word because it's allos combined with allos. So it's like saying all. If you're a Southerner, you probably sometimes say y'all, you know, meaning you all, but it's kind of a conjunction. If you're a Southerner, if you've ever, you know, gone to a pro wrestling event or a NASCAR and or a UFO convention, but they say you all, y'all, and it means all of you, but then when they're really talking about it, they say all y'all. It's like this totally embracing, inclusive, all y'all. You guys are all different, but you're all in it together. We are all in this together, all y'all. The word one another in the Greek means all y'all. And so Jesus is, I'm amazed that a Southerner got here, got this far. But I'm really happy too. Because we aren't who God wants us without having all kinds of people, certainly. And I'm a Southerner at heart. I've been in Southern California all my life. My mom was an Okie, if that helps. But Jesus is saying, I'm doing this for you so that you guys together can understand. You are in this together. I'm not doing it because you guys are special. I'm not doing it for just all the disciples. I am telling you, have a heart that embraces people who are different than you are and include them with you. This is so hard for us to sometimes understand, but that's what he's communicating to them. Now, we go on and beginning in verse 18 on down through about verse 30, we don't have time to read through all of it, but it's like an interlude where Jesus was troubled because he realized Judas, who he had just washed his feet, he knew that Judas was going to go and betray him, was going to go sell him out to the Jewish religious leaders who hated him. And it was bothering him, and he was saying, you know what? You guys are clean, but not all of you, because one of you is going to betray me. And in the other Gospels, the disciples were all like, is it me? Is it me? It's funny, they didn't know it was obviously Judas. They just were each asking. In Luke, I think it is, Judas even said to Jesus, is it me? Is it I? And he goes, you said it. Ooh, awkward. But, you know, in this story, if you read it through, you see that John was, he makes a point that he, the disciple who Jesus loved, is like leaning on Jesus. So Peter notices that and goes, hey, ask him. Ask him who it is. Let's find out who it is. And so John goes, who is it? And Jesus said, when I take the piece of bread from this Passover meal and I'm going to dip it and I'm going to give it to someone, the person I give it to, that's the guy. That's the one. And it says that he dipped the bread and he served it to Judas. And Judas ends up leaving. And still, the disciples really didn't know what Judas was leaving for. Said that, you know, he was the accountant. So they figured he was going to go give money to charity or something, or do accounting things. So he just left, and that was that. Then Jesus begins, after he left, to get even more specific with them about how this act of love affects who they are and how they are to live. And beginning with verse 31, it said, when Judas had gone out, Jesus said, now the Son of Man is glorified and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself and glorify him immediately. In other words, now you're going to see how great God is with what's about to happen. And then he says, little children, I shall be with you a little while longer. You will seek me. And as I said to the Jews, where I am going, you cannot come. So now I say to you, here's the deal. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, again, that same word, allelon, as I have loved you, that you also love one another, all y'all. By this, all will know that you are my disciples if you have love for all y'all. So he says, I got a new commandment for you. Now, why is it such a new commandment to tell them to be loving? Hadn't he talked about that already? In fact, hadn't he even told, when people came and said, okay, what's the greatest commandment? And he said, well, the greatest commandment is you need to love God. But the second commandment is just like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. He said, all of that summarizes the entire Old Testament law. So Jesus had been telling them that they needed to love all along. What's so new about this? Well, the best example that he could give prior to this was love people the way you love yourself. And that's a pretty good start. But the truth is, some people don't love themselves all that much. And as a result of their not loving themselves, they don't have a real solid frame of reference for how to love others. So he says, this is completely new, because from now on, the standard is not your own self-love, which you may have varying degrees of. The standard now is, you look at how I love you. That's how you're supposed to love each other. Again, I just served you. I just washed your feet. That's what I want you to do for all y'all, because that's what I am saying is the new commandment. It's more important than everything else, just that you love others, in particular, that you love people who are different than you are. So, you know, he lays this out and then says, this is what it means to be a disciple. There are all kinds of definitions for what does it mean to follow Jesus. Jesus just makes it really simple. It looks like doing what I do in loving and serving others. There's your definition. Now, Peter pipes up at this point in verse 36. And Peter, by the way, didn't even notice the whole new commandment, love one another and all that. He completely skips over that because he lost Jesus when Jesus said, you can't come where I'm going. And so Peter's like, forget the love stuff. What do you mean we can't go where you're going? I'm going. He said to him, Lord, where are you going? Jesus answered, where I am going, you can't follow me now, but you shall follow me afterward. Peter started to get it, and he goes, Lord, why can I not follow you now? I will lay down my life for your sake. Jesus answered him, will you lay down your life for my sake? Most assuredly, I say to you, the rooster shall not crow till you have denied me three times. Peter was often telling Jesus that he was wrong. Usually when he did, he would call him Lord, and then he would tell him, nah, you got this wrong. In Matthew and Mark's Gospels, Peter actually says, Jesus, I get what you're saying. And all these other guys, you're right. They probably are going to desert you, but not me. I am somebody special. I am your best disciple. I'm the next pope. I am just going to, I'm totally different than everything that you think that I'm going to do. And Jesus goes, actually, when you hear the cock crow, you'll know you've denied me three times. And as you know, as the week went on, Peter, in fact, did deny even knowing Jesus. When people go, hey, weren't you one of his disciples? He's like, no. They're like, yeah, you got a Galilean accent. You look, I'm sure I saw you with him. And he's like, no, you didn't. And he cursed. And when he did it the third time, he heard the cock crow for the second time. And he's like, oh. See, Peter knew he was special, but he thought he was more special. And when you think that being special means that you're more special than other people, then you miss the whole point of what it is to be loved by God, to be included by Jesus. And so, you know, here we see twice in this chapter, Peter's like, I'm special, more special than you. That's not what special means to Jesus. And that's why he did all of this for all of them and told them, you need to love everybody. You need to serve people the way that I do.
You're listening to The Balanced Word with Pastor Dave Rolf. As we go through the Gospel of John together, there may come a time when you'd like to hear a message again. You can do so rather easily at thebalancedword.com or call and request a CD copy at 949-362-7475. By the way, we're making this complete series in John available to you on a thumb drive for a donation of $10 or more. Go through this powerful gospel from start to finish with Pastor Dave. Again, call 949-362-7475 and we can help you with that. Please remember, it's your support that allows us to bring the teaching of God's Word to the radio every day. Thank you for standing with us. Again, we can be reached at 949-362-7475. Or you can make a donation and resource request online at thebalancedword.com. We'd like to invite you to visit us at Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. Pastor Dave Rolf teaches most weekends, and you can hear him teach the Word Sunday morning at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. He always enjoys meeting his listeners, so please say hi after the service. Visit ccpacifichills.org for more information. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. Let's get back to the message now as Pastor Dave continues to explain what it means to be a disciple of Christ.
Loving service for others is the single distinguishing characteristic of whether or not you are really a Christian. It's that simple love, and loving in that way. I think for most people, they think you can tell somebody's a Christian if you hear their theology and it's all correct. They believe all the things that we believe. They know all the things that we know. And then some people decide, oh, somebody's a Christian as long as they don't use bad language or as long as they don't, you know, drink or smoke pot, as long as they don't, you know, we make these rules of behavior or rules of theology, or maybe we just think, you know, the way we know that we're the true disciples is, look how many other people believe what we believe. Oh, I get so encouraged when I see that, wow, there's lots of Christians. We really think that we're more on the right track if a bunch of people agree with us. And we think if there aren't a lot of people who agree with us, we become insecure and we think, maybe I'm wrong. But the test of discipleship is not a test of orthodoxy. It is not a test of orthopraxy, how you practice your faith. It's not a question of how brilliant you are or how well you argue or what your pedigree is or what church you go to. Jesus makes it really plain. If you are my disciple, you will love and serve others the way I do. God causes the rain to fall on the just and the unjust. He loves everyone. John 3:16, for God so loved Christians? For God so loved Calvary Chapel? No, for God so loved the world that he gave. And that's the love that Jesus is challenging his disciples to. I want you to love the way I love, because ultimately that's what makes you a disciple. That's how people will know. Paul talked about this in 1 Corinthians 13. I don't care how many gifts you have. I don't care if you can speak in tongues of men and of angels. I don't care if you give your body to be burned. I don't care if you know everything. If you do it without love, it doesn't mean squat. It means a clanging cymbal. That's all it is, just a random noise. Jesus is making that clear. Loving service is the single distinguishing characteristic of a disciple of Jesus.
We'll finish up this message on what love looks like next time on The Balanced Word, when Dave Rolfe returns to John's Gospel. This program is listener-supported and brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel.
Wake up, my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands.